Hello and welcome to Behind the Bar with Bind of Cthulhu. We are here today with Kel and Skald from Awfully Queer Heroes about their game Vildheim.
Hello.
Come on.
Hey, yeah.
Introduce yourselves, if you like.
Kel, you want to go first?
I'm waving at the screen, still remembering no one can see me. Not having a camera is very irritating. Hello. I am Kel of Awfully Queer Heroes, the original creator and now joint creator with Skald. I do most of the social and advertising side of things, marketing, in relation to pretty much everything AQH-wise. So if you see an AQH advert, if you talk to someone on Facebook, Blue Sky, or Twitter, that is likely me. That is actually pretty guaranteed to be me. And yeah, hi.
I'm Skald. I'm the other half of AQH. I joined the company back when Kel was launching the Adventures in ADHD module, and while Kel handles some of the more front-facing aspects, I do a lot of the writing, and I do all of the design and layout for our finished products, as well as working with artists for commissions and stuff like that. And while I'm personally not as present on social media, you can also, you know, reach me through the AQH contacts as well. So yeah.
We thank you very much both for your time and appreciate dragging you onto this show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for being here. We asked this question to everyone we interview. Now, because there's two people, two answers would be acceptable. But if a pint of Cthulhu was any drink, what would it be?
Ooh.
Mm. In Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a lemon wall banger drink that they have towards the start when the president person meets up with the gang as a whole, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of it. But
wait, is it the Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster?
Yes, a Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster.
Yeah,
that one. I think, oh gosh, what's coming to mind for me isn't an actual mixed drink. I don't know if you've ever seen that black sesame seed paste. It's kind of got a peanut butter flavor, but it's pitch black, kind of oozy. It would be that in the bottom of a shot glass with absinthe on top. So like the green-black combo, I think. That's what I'd go with.
I would drink the heck out of that, actually. That sounds really nice.
Add it to the list, Matt.
You know I'm not writing these down, right? That's your job.
Oh, no.
You want to drink these, you write them down.
I want to make you drink these. That's the difference. Suffer with me. So then, how about you tell us a bit about your game?
Oh, gosh, that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness, where do I start? Okay, so it started in a crazy, off-the-wall way that you would not ever imagine, in that I had a dream. I had a crazy dream. And I dreamt that I was in some kind of, like, weird bog-type place, and I was having a conversation with someone, and they were like, the coolest thing would be if the mechanics were this and this and this, and I was working out the mechanics in the dream with this other person. No idea who they were. And then towards the end of the dream, just as I'm about to wake up, as I'm waking up, another figure comes in and goes, haha, I'm stealing all your ideas. You're not getting them back. And literally goes out of my head. I wake up and I don't remember a thing about this dream except that I made the system. I am frustrated as all hell, so irked. And I go back to sleep eventually, and I have another dream where one of my good friends from the community, Penny Blake, she just ambles in and goes, hey, so I hunted down that trickster for you. I've cut their head off. She throws their head at my feet and goes, I did steal back your idea, but it's really good. So you have to pay me a fiver for it. And then she vanishes. And like the rest of the night just goes. And I tell him about this the next day because I think it's hilarious that one of my idea gets stolen, then my friend steals it from them, but won't give it to me because she wants a fiver of all things. So I'm like, fine, whatever. So I tell Em about it, and I'm cracking up. I was like, this dream was amazing, the system was brilliant, I was having a whale of a time with it. And I can't remember a thing, and it frustrated me no end for days. And literally a week later, to the day, Penny's chatting away to me. She goes, hey, so I've just released one of my... she releases small, like, 20-page, sometimes solo, sometimes small group TTRPGs. She's like, I've just released my latest one. Would you have a look and then boost it on social? I was like, absolutely. I'll go in. Didn't think thought about it. Bought it for a fiver. In less than 5 minutes, I typed the entire idea back up and sent it to Em. I was like, oh. And she kept the agreement and gave me my idea back. And, like, I don't truly believe that's what happened. I just found it really funny. Like, I don't think there was some cosmic thing that she stole my idea. But I did find it really funny that it was just coincidence. My brain was like, oh, you gave her a fiver. I'll provide you your idea back now. And I even told Penny about it. But, yeah, so then I told Em... And then you started working on what I'd given you, mm-hmm. and the setting as well, because you'd been writing something already.
Yeah. So I had, side tangent to that, I had a separate dream, one of those really vivid ones that kind of sticks with you after you wake up, about a really interesting nature setting that was kind of like moorland with these distinct groves of trees throughout it, and there were trolls involved, so that was already going on in the back of my mind. And then Kel presented me with about a page or so of ideas for, like, the basic mechanics of the game. So, you know, three basic stats instead of, like, in D&D, you have six. And I think it's, what, strength? I should know this. Physical, mental, and spiritual. That's what it is. So those basic stats for the game, and then said, you know, hey, can you do something with this? So... From there, I went and just worked on essentially building the system from the ground up, and then using that setting idea that we had come up with to kind of flesh it out from there.
That was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, about 2 years. It took a long time between the writing and just the building, and then all of the playtesting. It took a long time to kind of build and come together. I think that the playtesting was probably the longest.
Yeah. For clarifying... Yeah, but to clarify, the system isn't math heavy. It was the math to make sure that everything was properly balanced as you go up in levels from the start, that you're not crazy overpowered and god level at level 5 type thing. So the system is not math heavy at all.
Yeah, I think the hardest, it was definitely the part that took the longest and took the most work for me at least was the math. Oh my gosh, there was so much math, just making sure it was all balanced for... the attributes and all that kind of stuff. It was a lot of math.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, we did. Penny playtested it for a while for us before we playtested it. Miranda, who is Cord... World of Cord in the community, she playtested it for 2 or 3 months with her group. They gave us feedback that we then revised and went through and set up a group ourselves, and then we playtested it for a year, going through and making changes as we were going to make sure that, oh, that's completely broken. Like, for example, before we even gave it to Penny, I'm sorry, darling, I'm going to throw you under the bus here. There was a mechanic. There was a mechanic that was if someone's dying... if this person has 0 health points, so they're unconscious, the mechanic was someone can check if they're dying, and then that person gets a bonus when they do a death save, or the equivalent of a death save. So my note in it was, hey, are you dying? You look like you're dying. Okay, cool. You can't answer because you're unconscious, but have a bonus. Have a bonus on me, mate. And that was, like, I can be a very sarcastic person, so this is my note. I haven't said it to Em, I just wrote it in the doc, like, hey, are you dying down there? Oh, you don't look good. Have a bonus, mate.
Feeling of acknowledgement brings you back to life.
Yeah, just the general
see
acknowledgement.
See your struggle.
There you go.
So we fixed that one to you actually have to have the medical skill. And you have to actually look physically at the person and try and, like, bandage them up and things, as opposed to just, hey, what's going on down there, mate? And actually do something to aid them, which was a, it was funny and it was a lot of fun. And we found some random things that our team came up with when we were playtesting that it was just like, well, we hadn't considered that, but we have now. And what can, you know, players always love throwing weirdisms at you, so that's why we spent a solid year playtesting it and abusing the daylights out of it. And how much nonsense can we really, like, try and push to the limits before either we break the system or there's a rule in place to stop the ability to break the system?
I would love to... Matt, are we playing this game, yes? At some point.
If one of these two would like to run it for us, then sure.
Okay, good. Last game we playtested was Dance Macabre. We made a human centipede within about 30 seconds of starting.
Okay.
And put the question to the DM.
That sounds gross.
Like, zombies essentially are a staple. Everyone comes back when they die. If you put 10 people in a blender, mush them all up, and then pour out a tenth of that into a glass, does that become one person? A mix of all the different people? What happens there?
We gave him a lot of things to think about, and not all of them are very sane.
Gross.
Very fun.
Okay, so Kickstarter has a few inspirations. What else kind of inspired you to create this? I mean, obviously you said it came from a dream, but kind of what else came from this then?
Gosh. I think it was kind of a mix of... I mean, we both have a lot of experience writing and making other TTRPGs. We've done a lot of projects previously, so I think it was a lot of our favorite themes and elements and aspects of those. And then just combining some of the things that we both really like. So whether that's, you know, the kind of Norse... Yeah, the Norse Viking aesthetic. So I am studying to get my PhD in mythological studies, and my focus is on, like, Norse Scandinavian mythology. So that was a big influence on some of this, as well as like the aesthetic, and building structures, clothes, and then of course the other aspect of that, which is more along the lines of like a gothic, not in the same place, but both existing in the world. And part of that's because, Kel's a huge, huge Bloodborne fan. So I think putting those two aspects together is kind of what made the world here. And then of course just informed by some of the stuff that we enjoyed from making our previous projects.
Not in the same location, to clarify. So the Gothic is one area and the Nordic is sort of up in the mountains.
Different settings for the two.
Further out, if you will. Not Gothic next to Nordic.
Yeah.
The two are separate for the most part.
Give the one reborn Mjolnir.
Yeah, so it's just the two different ones. There
sounds
you go.
Absolutely delightful. 10 out of 10. So, I guess, can you describe the core mechanics of your game and how they differ from other popular TTRPGs? You said you had three stats instead of D&D 6, for instance.
Yeah, so it's base three stats. It's pretty similar to anyone who has experience playing either Pathfinder or Pathfinder 2E or D&D 3.5 or 5E. It'll probably be pretty familiar. You have your basic stats, and then you also have skills as well. There's some spellcasting included. So you use those different stats, whether you're in combat or doing skill checks. But it's a pretty similar setup to... those other games. I think that the biggest difference mechanically is that the one change we made is that damage is multiplicative instead of additive. So where most systems you add a modifier to your damage, this one is multiplicative. So that's how you calculate your damage if you actually hit something. But other than that, most of the mechanics are really similar to some of those other games that I mentioned as far as skill checks and actions and things like that, what you can do.
Neat.
Okay. That's, I mean, you said it wasn't math heavy. That kind of does sound a little bit math heavy.
I mean, it's
not that bad.
I think it's very small numbers is the thing, though. So with the multiplication, you're only going up to, like, maybe four.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing else. Like, higher than four.
The highest it would go up to is five. So... the highest amount that you would, and that's usually at like level 9 or 10, for the characters, then you might potentially be timesing it by five. But for the most part, it's going to be 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 at a push.
Yeah. So again, yeah, really, really small numbers.
I have a hard time adding that up.
It's hard to take most things.
Okay. With your inspirations then, and how you've developed it so far, how did you go into the world building aspect side of things? What kind of generated the most ideas? How did you build your world from the ground up?
Oh gosh. I mean, we both have a lot of experience with creating fantasy worlds because of our previous games. And I've been a GM or a DM for years, so I feel like world building can be kind of inadvertently part of that. I prefer to do homebrew campaigns. So starting with that aesthetic and then building up with the world, the locations, the characters, some of the holidays. You know, Kel and I are both interested in a lot of the Celtic and Norse traditions, so holidays around like the winter and summer solstice. So drawing on a little bit of mythology, but also drawing on a lot of our previous experience with games and with world building, and then of course just filling it with lots of characters as well.
Sorry, I realized that my audio wasn't recording properly on that last little bit because my settings had gone wacky. I may have to just repeat that and you might have to edit.
No worries, easy peasy.
Crap, what did I just say? M.
Hack and Slashy could make it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Repeating now. So the world as a whole can be made into a hack and slasher, but it's not designed that way. It's more aimed at being roleplay heavy, so it's designed so that there are travel rules, there's interaction options with the massive amount of NPCs that we've made. So while it can be done as a hack and slasher if you really wanted, and those other parts can essentially just be ignored, it isn't that it isn't designed that way. It's designed to be flexible, but we'd hoped that it would be more of a roleplay heavy one, and that's how we've aimed it towards. The other perk, which is particularly unique and I haven't seen in a different RPG, is that if you start your character as a fighter, or a type of fighting class, if you will, with every single time you level up, you get to choose how you change that character. So you can start as a fighter and end as one of the most powerful mages on the continent. Or you can start as I have fire, I can send fireballs, or I can do this cool spell, and become an incredible fighter instead, or a ranger. So the way that the stats are designed to be able to work is, it doesn't matter what you want to do, it doesn't matter overly what you start with, you can create anything of your character within the bounds of this world. Small.
Yeah. So you've got magic and you've got melee, and you can, there's some limitations. So, you know, higher level spells, you would have to choose a magic class in order to access those at the higher levels. But, or for example, only warriors can use shields. But beyond that, there's a lot of flexibility. So if you wanted to make a Witcher-like character, spells and melee, you can do that. You can kind of mix and match and get the balance of magic and melee that you want in your character. And it's very, very flexible across class. There's obviously some limitations and they start a bit differently, but where you take it and how you progress your character is much more up to you. Another part of what, you know, we really wanted to do as far as what this world entailed and what this game entailed was, in the same way that you have that freedom of character and you can really be really flexible with the character that you make, we tried to orient a lot of stuff around the aesthetics of the character. So what I mean by that is that when you're building these characters, you have a lot of freedom to have a character that is able to be in the world and move through the world in the way that you want. Random example, it always bothered me, I think it's in 5e or one of the D&D games, where the highest damage single-hand weapon, I believe, is a rapier. And I would occasionally play a character who that was not part of their aesthetic at all. So you have to choose whether you want to have a mechanically efficient character or one that looks the way that you want. So with this one and with this game, and I think some folks might like this, some folks not as much, the weapons are largely the same in the damage they deal. It varies based on your own individual abilities, your own strength. So you'll have that variance based on your own stats as to how much damage it deals. But the weapon's base damage is pretty much the same for all of them. So you can choose to have your character have the clothes, the items, the weapons that you want. The aesthetic can be what you're trying to build. And I think we really geared it towards a lot more the role-playing crowd in that respect. Same with some of the appearance of the different ancestries. And we went really queer with those. So there's some ancestries that have, you know, distinctly bright colored hair, even almost neon shades. Others, you know, have colored eyes, you know, multicolored eyes, or like golds, silver, different colored eyes. We've also got, you know, the sharp canines as one of the traits. So we were really trying to make a world where you can build a character that you really, really, really want, and they will be able to move through the world and be in the world in that way that fits with what your sense of your character really is.
Nice.
We also have in the disability rules, because that was something that was pretty important to us. Across all of our products, we've always made sure that there was access ramps, winches, whether it was on the map or in the books. We've always tried to make sure and spoken to people who have varying disabilities to know what would be the best way that they would want things included. So we've tried to put all of everything that we've known from 4 or 5 years of making these projects. This will be our 14th Kickstarter now. So we've tried to put everything that we've known from that into this one book. And there'll be some things that people like, there'll be some things that people don't. For example, if someone was to kick you with just a regular shoe on, sure, it's gonna hurt. If someone kicks you with a prosthetic limb, in theory, it's gonna hurt a hell of a lot more, depending what it's made of. But we kept the stats the same so that essentially one isn't preferred. We're not encouraging or discouraging anything. There's no penalties for, you know, walking up an ice... there might be walking up an ice slope in regular shoes, I think, actually. There's movement penalties, but whether you have a prosthetic, a wheelchair, or two legs, the penalties are the same. So we're not... We tried to make sure that there was no discrimination. We have spoken to people to try and make sure that we've done that as best as we can. And there'll be some things like the fact that there isn't a negative to one section or the other that people may not like. But for us, we didn't want to be seeing as saying this or that is better or worse than one or the other. I am autistic and ADHD. That we do have autistic characters, we do have ADHD characters. How well that comes across is up to the person's interpretation who's reading it. But we've done our best in creating that. Because I like being seen in my games. And I'm sure Em likes it, and other people, I'm pretty certain, are going to enjoy it too. So we try to do our best with things like that.
Oh. What is it, Matron? Yep, I'm on it. It's thinking too much.
It does put a good bit of question into your head, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it was always interesting to see if people include that, how they treat it. And I mean, thinking back to Bloodborne, the fucking wheelchair gunmen.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, we have the combat wheelchair.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
We actually have some really cool art of that that has like axes, a crossbow, and a couple of other things on it.
Ooh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think we have one of the main characters, one of the main quest giver characters, actually has
She's
a prosthetic limb. So her left arm. Yes, she is.
She is on the
she
front
is.
Cover.
If you look closely at the front cover, her entire left arm is. Yeah. It's a wooden, wooden
it's
prosthetic.
It's made entirely made out of wood and magic. So when you look closely at it, you'll see glowing runes on it. That essentially the runes are what makes it grow out of her arm and work as it does.
That's fucking sick.
And she can still cast magic out of said arm.
Nice. Mm. So how did you approach the world building aspect of your game?
That one. And that's on
you. Oh, wait, fuck. Damn it, I forget things. Sorry.
Cut.
Can you walk... And cut, yes. Can you walk us through the character creation process in your game?
Oh.
I can probably answer that one easier than you, darling.
I think... You think? Because, I mean, I did write up all the characters. Mm. But... Oh, no, because you played.
I made all the characters for the quick start guides.
Yeah. So, no, you take this one.
Okay. So, I personally find it pretty easy. But I have done it a whole bunch of times now. So, that just might be, you know, privilege of getting to go over and over it. excuse me, sorry. I find it easy because as you go through the guide... It says, here are your ancestries. Here are the perks that you get from the ancestries. Which one do you want? And it says, for example, you might get a expertise in melee weapons. Or you might get night vision. No, can't remember the name of it. You may get one of those that allows you night eyes. Thank you. Whoops. You can tell what I play a lot of. You might get night eyes, or you might get something else. For example, the wildkin have exceptional smell perception. So instead of tracking with visuals, you may be able to track using your sense of smell instead. So that is laid out. You say, right, I want these, and you put those three details that you get onto your character sheet. Mm-hmm. Then it goes, great, here are the classes, and here are the stats that you'll get from those classes. Which would you prefer? And it reads out the exact stats that you get, it reads out the exact details and what effects they will have. You pick which one. For example, a witch will get two in spiritual and what maybe one in melee. But a ranger might get two in ranged and one in melee, but no spiritual, so they can't cast spells, for example. They can add that later on their first level, should they choose to, but to start with, they won't have that. So you pick which one you like the most of, and you write down those three things. Then it says, great, here is your starting equipment. Put that in your inventory. You pick your name, you pick your gender, whichever you want, or none. Non-binary is absolutely valid, completely and utterly. If you look at the quick start guide, there's at least two non-binary characters, I believe, because I made them, so I do that a fair bit. Yeah, so then you've got your name, your ancestry, all your stats, your starting equipment, you're ready to go.
Nice.
And we also have it in the book, so it says, this is more for the GM section. So it says, here is level one. You can either do it by the amount of experience points, or you can do it by big milestones. So you can say, great, I think you've worked hard enough, you guys have leveled up. And then next to that, it says, this is what you get at that level. So there's no ambiguity, there's no guessing, oh, I'm at level 6, what do I get? You scroll down to where it says level 6, it goes, you get 3 attributes, or you get 3 skills, or you get two attributes and 1 skill. And it tells you exactly, step by step, everything that you need.
Hmm.
So a complete beginner GM who's never GM'd anything before can do it, but someone who's experienced can also go, great, I've skimmed that, I know what it is, and then just deep dive into the good stuff.
Hmm. Well, with all this in mind and the setting itself, what kind of experience are you looking to give players? Are you looking to go slightly down the horror side, slightly more down thriller side? What kind of thing are you looking to create here?
Well, we originally built the world to accommodate a lot of different kind of tastes, so I think a lot of that would be up to how the GM would want to run the world. And there's additionally different quests that you can do that would take you in different directions. For example, we did one session of our test play where we had we were in one of the more gothic cities, and it was All Hallows, and there were, you know, jack-o'-lanterns, ravens, mist, all that kind of stuff, and there was a masquerade ball that everyone went to. And then, you know, we do another one where we're up in the north with some of the folks who have the, like, Scandinavian aesthetic, and we're hunting trolls up in the mountains in the snow. So I think there's a lot of, like, open possibilities for how people want to play it. As far as the world itself, it's not exactly light, not exactly dark. It's one of those very kind of precarious, on-the-edge worlds where the decisions that you make matter. and there's both dark and light that you can find in the world. Think kind of like Witcher 3, Wild Hunt, if you played that one, where it's like there's a little bit of both in the world. And so how you play through it and, you know, what you go for is really up to the players and the GM. And it's very much designed as kind of an open sandbox style world. The quests, which are optional, give you some direction, but it's, again, it's pretty open to whatever your specific group is looking to get out of it.
That was honestly hellish to play, to go up against. That was
hard. Yeah, and then there was this one where, for example, some of the creatures that we used are a little bit on the darker side. There's plenty of horrible things that lurk in the shadows and go bump in the night. And one of them was, it's based on Scandinavian folklore, it's called a pesta. And it's basically the physical manifestation of the plague. That was a rough fight. And it's one of these kind of dark and twisted creatures. So we include that in there. But there's also some like cute sprite-like creatures as well. So again, how you choose to go through it, it's really up to the players. It's up to the person running the game. We wanted to give as many options as we possibly could, so you could really make and play the game the way that you wanted to.
That you know about, but they were hard to go against, and some of them were downright holy hell in a handbasket creepy. But either way, it was always
gotta love a good hell creature.
When I was playing it, anyway. I can't speak for other people's sessions, though they have given us very positive reviews. There was one that looked like a creepy clown bird, and one of our players was like, no, I'm out! And they just like turned around and walked away. Not from the game, their character turned around and walked away from the creepy clown bird. It was very funny. It was a clown bird.
Appropriate reaction to clowns. Clown bird. Just leave. Don't get ideas, Matt. No.
It was just the vulture that could smile.
Matt.
Okay.
Hey, clown bird sounds cool. Don't
just like quietly writing this down, taking notes.
So, with combining a bunch of different folklore and what kind of challenges did you face during developing the game?
Honestly, the math. The developing the mechanics was definitely the hardest part, far and away. And just trying to make sure that the numbers were as balanced as they could be, and that was... Neither Kel nor myself is really a huge numbers person, but that was definitely, I think, the most challenging aspect of building it.
Yeah, you took all that because
it.
I took one look at it and went...
Yeah. No, I took the numbers. And I think that was definitely the most challenging part of bringing it together. There was like a 2-week period. This was back when we were still living in different countries. 2-week period where I went and visited and just spent the whole time working on building and refining the mechanics for just the backbone of what the game would be. But that's definitely the hardest part, I think. The world was just kind of there. It was just getting the math to math properly, if that makes sense.
And that being said, everyone who has reviewed it has been incredibly positive. We've had feedback on like, hey, this thing is broke as shit, which obviously we've fixed. And that's fine, because on a first go through, there was no way we was going to get even half of everything perfect. But for the setting and the second and fourth and fifth go throughs, everything has been incredibly positive from people. One of our playtesters is constantly on Blue Sky like, oh my god, people, look at this project. This project is amazing. I'm going to spend all my money on it. And I'm like, please don't. We want you to spend responsibly. But they've been amazing because they just fell in love with it. And they were like, as soon as it comes out, I'm running it on all my games. You cannot stop me. I'm like, we don't want to stop you. But it's been really nice to see that it's been positively received, so that's good.
So you did touch on it a little bit just then. How did you go about balancing all of your mechanics?
Gosh, I mean, a lot of it is thinking about the relationship between the players and the monsters they're fighting. So when you're dealing, it's not a one-to-one balance, because it's designed for a group, similar to D&D and Pathfinder. So you're having three, for example, player characters against maybe a single monster. How do you make sure that that is a balanced encounter? And a lot of it was just kind of figuring the numbers in relationship to each other. So using what's the best possible scenario, what's the worst possible scenario. If this person gets the best roll they can on the highest possible stat they can have, how's that going to reflect whatever the armor level of this creature is, or whatever it is that makes it hard to hit, and so on and so forth. So it's kind of this back and forth of that. And it's tricky because the minute you change one stat to try and fix an issue, it screws something else up. So you just have to keep going back through and back through and back through, making sure that it's that everything scales proportionately as well as the character's level. And then after that, just roll a bunch of dice. Roll a bunch of dice, see what numbers you come up with, test it on your own first, go through it that way, and then from there, once you've got that refined, then you can kind of go into the playtesting. But it's all about, at least with the leveling in this, making sure that the increases are proportionate, that even if you're maxed out in one aspect, that you're not so overpowered that everything's super easy, and even if you're lagging on a different trait, that you're not suddenly going to die because of it. So finding that balance point, which is mostly a lot of, I feel like, stabbing in the dark until you hit something. And then, of course, I think the best advice I could give to anyone who's making a game is test it again. Because that's how you'll find the little things that are broken that you didn't see the first time through. So all that time that you had playtesting, it was invaluable.
A plus. How do you handle combat and conflict resolution in your game system?
Combat and conflict, as you know,
you're going to know this one better than me, because I've only done it from a player point of view, not a GM point of view.
Yeah. I would say from a GM point of view with the combat and conflict, you know, you have combat that's similar to any game. You know, usually it's resolved when something or someone dies. But there are alternatives to that. You know, we do have rules for fleeing that are also included. And then the non-combat conflict is resolved with skills. So, for example, one of the skills that you can have is called Gab, like Gift of the Gab. So that's how well you can either coerce or intimidate or cajole someone, befriend them, whatever, how good you are at winning them over with your words. So we have skill checks for resolving either if you're trying to climb up something or if you're trying to barter with someone for other things that might come up in world.
Something that you briefly mentioned that I'll just expand on is if you do want to flee, Em said there's consequences. Essentially, if you turn your back on the creature and try and run, your armor rating goes down by 5 until you're safely away. So if you only have, for example, say an armor rating of 7, that goes down to 2, and they only have to get above a 2 before they'll actually connect or cut through your armor and damage you. So that is something that I think it's really interesting, because if your back's turned to something and someone's swinging at you, you're not going to know where they're going to hit, what they're doing, if they're going to connect or not, because you're too busy booking it out of there. So that's something that you don't tend to see generally anywhere that I've encountered, but that I particularly really love, because you can run, but there will be consequences.
Makes sense. Turn your back, expose a weaker target.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned a few times people have playtested this already. How has that influenced your final product so far?
Massively. The playtesting has massively influenced how it ended up, because I think, you know, that's how we found all the places that weren't working, all the things that could be improved or could even be changed. It's how you get more eyes on a project. It's how you get external perspectives beyond just Kel and myself who were building it. And I feel like the more perspectives you get, the better. but also, you know, some of the things that we changed were either fundamental mechanics or really big aspects of the world.
Yeah,
like really big changes sometimes because of this. But it's one of those things where it's like playtest over and over and over again. There was more on the earlier sessions of the playtesting where we had to make at least a change to maybe three per session because we found something that was like, oh, mm-hmm. oh no, that's not going to work. That mechanic totally doesn't work. Less so as we refined it and got towards the end of the playtesting. But
was a lot.
I mean, massive change throughout, just with working with people and getting feedback and input and just trying to break the system and succeeding and then fixing it so it won't break again.
Even before that, when Penny and Miranda were testing them, Penny gave us a 3-page, here is my feedback, these are the things that I loved, these are the things I think you need working on. It was like, great, thank you, appreciate that. And Miranda's feedback was both brilliant and hilarious because she played it with her kids, and kids do the wackiest things. So there was some crazy suggestions. I was like, I am living for this. It's all going in. Which was really nice because that meant it was manageable math-wise or any other kind of wise for younger players, as well as adults. You don't just have to be, you know, over a certain age to figure it out, which was really nice. So that helped shape some of the mechanics to a small extent, some of the world, because it was like, I want a dragon! It's like, okay, we can put a dragon in.
I think that's the number one advice I'd have for anyone who wants to make a game, is be open to change. Be open to changing things, be open to tweaking things, be open to fixing things.
Sturdier.
Yeah, the more input you have from other people and the more you're able to incorporate that and the more you're able to fix the things that break in a way that makes sense, I think the better product you're going to end up with.
Here's a always fun question. What was the best part and the worst part of making the game?
Oh, the math was the worst part. The math was absolutely
which I was not
the worst
involved
part.
With, but yes.
Absolutely the worst part. Oh, yeah. The math was the worst. I think the best part for me as a GM and someone running it was being able to see how our players could get the accessories and the aesthetic that they wanted for their characters, and to see them see the way that the mechanics were different and how that let them do something that they really wanted to do that they might not otherwise have been able to, whether that's having a certain weapon or a certain appearance or, you know, certain gear, and just really seeing the reactions to when players got to play their characters the way they really wanted to, and how excited they got and how enjoyable that was for them, that for me as a GM was really, really, really enjoyable.
Magic tattoos.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was the other thing. Magic tattoos. Among all the other enchanted gear and whatnot you can customize your character with, we do have magic tattoos in the game. So you can choose appearance, color, anything like that to get the attributes that they have. But again, keeping it so you can really design your characters the way that you want them to be.
Fair. That was up there for me. I won't deny that was up there for me. Mine is a little bit different, though, because being on the player side of it, because you were GMing it, I got to meet... We have a lot of Easter eggs in the project for folks who have supported our work before, or for folks who are in the community. And getting to meet the Easter eggs, one of which is my character from the very first campaign I was ever in, which was Zane. They have been in every single project, one way or the other, whether they were named or just described. They've been in every project, and now they're a fully fleshed character. Most of them, they were just like, oh yeah, I know this person over there, Zane so-and-so, go speak to them. And that would be the end of the Easter egg. But in this, they're a fully fleshed character again with their own role in this particular project. And on the other side of that, we've made people that we know from the community into NPCs for that either are their version of their favourite characters that they always make recurringly that we happen to know just because we know them fairly well, or if we know that they prefer to be in there as themselves, we've created a version of them, so that we can then give them the book and be like, hey, thanks for supporting us over this time. And that was really nice for me, because I love that, and I love the community as a whole, and people have been there for us a lot over the last 4 or 5 years, and it's meant a ton to us for that constant support and that constant kindness and constant checking in and messaging someone being like, hey, I know that you love particularly fantasy books, I'm reading this one at the moment, I think it'll be up your alley, just wanted to say hi, hope you're good. And that'll be like one message for 6 months, and then I won't hear from them again for another 6 months till the same thing happens again, and I'll do the same to them and stuff. And it's nice that we got to immortalize
and I mean,
that
we,
in a way.
We wouldn't be where we are today.
It definitely does sound like a lovely thing to be able to do.
It meant a lot to me, and I didn't know Em was going to do it. So when I was meeting these people as characters, I was like, wait, this sounds like so-and-so, and that one sounds like this person. And Em was like, yes.
Yeah, because again, we wouldn't be where we are without those people. And there's a lot of wonderful people and wonderful creators in that community, and we've had a lot of support over the years from some of these folks just coming back, whether they're people that we've worked with for our projects or just people who've really supported them a lot or playtested or done, Twitch streams or that kind of thing. And so being able to do this is a way of, with this project that's kind of a culmination of a lot of the work that we've previously done, being able to put a little thank you in there in the form of these characters to just acknowledge the people who got us here.
And for me, encountering them as a player and seeing them as a character was so exciting. Like, hearing their description is like, wait, I know this person. Like, oh, is this so-and-so? And getting all crazy excited. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
One of the best parts even for us has been, you know, talking with other TTRPG players, creators, getting 100%. To know people. It's always great.
So, we'll start wrapping this thing down a little bit. this launches on Kickstarter. Have you got a date that you're planning on actually releasing that?
Yes. One second. I can't see my calendar on my computer. Where is my mouse? There is my mouse. We are launching on the 4th of March. It's a Tuesday at 5 p.m. UK time or 9 a.m. Pacific.
And can you tell people about the level of tiers that you will have available and any of the potential restrictions?
Certainly. We have quite a few different tiers available. I am calling them up right now so that I can give more details. There are some restrictions purely because of shipping, which is unfortunately a big issue right now. We have a couple of early backer tiers, so anyone who backs within the first 48 hours will get $5 off the digital only or the print copy, depending which one they want. The print copy does include digital versions as well, so they'll get $5 off either way there. We've got quite a range. We've got digital available worldwide, physical book only is available most countries. Certainly UK, not Europe, unfortunately, because of the new tariffs. And that is something that we've only encountered in the last 2-3 months, is Europe have put in a new security tariff where you have to have someone... You have to go through a process to essentially say this item is safe and can be shipped to Europe, which that part is fine, but we have to have a representative in Europe, which costs a couple of grand a year, which we just couldn't manage. So unfortunately what we're doing at the moment is we're going to have to say, if you've backed on the digital tier, then what we'll do is when the project is complete and we've put the book into either bookstores or DriveThruRPG, we'll give a digital link to a discounted version that can go to Europe, and that will be available for anyone who's backed it at a digital tier or higher. So if someone wants duplicate copies, or they're just like can't back at that point at the level that they want, if they back at the digital tier, then they'll get a discount off the physical tier later. And we usually run the discounts for about a month to give people time for whenever their pay comes in and stuff, to try and account for, you know, times are tough. So we have those ones for non-European, primarily US-based. We have ones that include dice packs. We also have, I created a program that is a digital reference file. So you load it up. It's a self-contained HTML file, which has links to all the major towns, all the major NPCs, all of the magical items and costings for those. So if you don't want to hunt through the book, and or you don't want to have pieces of paper, you can just have this self-contained HTML file that doesn't have to be online. So you can have it on a Kindle if you wanted, that's disconnected, so long as it can run somewhere. And that's included in every tier, from the digital, the printed, it's in all of them. And it includes absolutely, not everything, but absolutely everything in relation to what the NPC's names are, what their general sort of look, names, title, what their role is in the town. So if they're a tavern keeper, jarl, things like that, what their sexuality is. I've included all of that, and that's in every tier. We do have dice, but if someone in the UK wanted those, it would be a case of drop us a message, or back the tier as a US one and add a little bit extra for the cost of shipping, because for the most part, shipping to the UK is too expensive, so we'd have to work something else out for you. But we've got custom streaming overlays. There is a tier that has hand-knitted scarves by myself. I have spent the better part of a year hand-knitting all of the scarves that are based on the colours of the world. So they're designed to be wearable if you were in the world. I have the knitted loom right next to me, which I can't show you because I don't have a camera. I'm so sorry. But yeah, I have one that's 3/4 finished right next to me at the moment. It's probably the last one that I'm going to get to do. But yes, I have a few of those that are all based on the world and what colours people would wear in their clothing of the world. So greens, browns, maybe some greys, a mix of different things. A lot of them are green and silver, or green and grey. Some of them are autumn colours, so we've got those. We've been focusing on the green ones primarily, but I do have a couple of the others. And yeah, so then we have a merchant tier as well, but that would be for anyone who has either a brick and mortar or an online store. And because there's two books within the project, so when people are backing it, they get the two books instead of just the one. The merchants get 5 of each, so they get 10 books in total for what they're backing.
Nice. I can't help but say there's been a very enthusiastic crow in the background of yours.
Yeah, there's a lot of them here.
I know, right? I am
it's
so sorry.
Fine.
They love milk
so
time.
She's even giving this really detailed explanation.
Yes.
All of a sudden, it's car. Okay.
Deal with that every day. The other day, there was a hawk that flew near where they are, and like 7 just descended onto the tree, and I was like, guys, I'm trying to work. Please, oh man. And I had to shut the window, and they were still going mad and cawing for their dear lives.
I love it. Well, Jay, do you want to shut us down then?
Yeah.
And we'll let these lovely people get on with their day?
For sure.
So, just pretty simple. Where can people find you?
Okay, we are on Twitter. No worries. We are on Twitter, but honestly, I don't go there a whole lot. So if you message us ever on Twitter, please bear with me because I go there maybe once a month now to just check it out and make sure that's correct. That is AQH Publications. Blue Sky is where I pretty much live for the most part. That is AQH Publications. Kickstarter is our former slash still used a little bit name of Awfully Queer Heroes. We only changed that because we're going into novels and we were getting quite get a lot of abuse for being so outwardly gay and queer. And while we're not dimming that in any way, shape or form, we have taken that word out and just made it AQH. And the AQH still stands for Awfully Queer Heroes, but I wanted a little bit less abuse online, so...
That's a shame that people are giving you abuse over a word.
Oh, yeah. I've had some fun ones. I've had someone demand a refund because after backing on Awfully Queer Heroes, our page being filled with rainbows, they got upset because the Pride progressive pride flag was twice in the book, and they were like, give me a refund. I'm like, no. I'm not giving you a refund because you're homophobic. Go away. And they're like, people cannot see me owning this. I'm like, then don't show them.
It's a book.
I was so unsympathetic. And they hounded me for months to give them a refund, but I refused. Like, if there is a problem with the product, it's damaged, if there's something not right, I will absolutely do whatever I can to fix things. If it's because someone's a homophobic piece of poop, they can go burn somewhere because I don't care.
Call that a bigot tax.
Yes, quite. And they tried reporting me to Kickstarter, but Kickstarter were like, you have your product, go suck
over
it.
Over a flag.
Yes, thank you, Kickstarter.
Over a flag.
Yeah, it wasn't a great time. But, you know, I get one of those probably every couple of months. So we are most places anyway, long story short, my apologies, under AQH Publications. But on Kickstarter, it is Awfully Queer Heroes. It is super gay. We do everything to be as inclusive to everyone as we possibly can, except bigots, Nazis, or racists, because they can all burn. So yes, that's pretty much where you can find us. Please come talk to me. I love talking to people online. Always up for a chat, and I'll happily chinwag with anyone for so long as I'm awake and actually able to.
Love it. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, this has been A Pint of Cthulhu talking to Awfully Queer Heroes. Awfully Queer Heroes about Bilheim. Goodbye for now.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye.